All right, good evening, everyone. Thank you for standing for the late start. I just figured it'd be closer to Mincha. Although I might keep it at 7 because nobody really is showing up in person so much, so I might just stay at home and stick to only Zoom at 7. So I'll let you know, it'll be correct on the Echad for next week. But either way, I want to start a new topic. We've been discussing Shabbos in the city for a little while now. And one of the questions that came up a little while ago when we were talking, I think, about elevators was the issue of non-Jewish employees, the concept of what some people call the Shabbos Goy, the non-Jew, you know, who works for us on Shabbos. And I want to kind of explore that topic. It's actually, there's a number of different elements to that topic. So I kind of want to go through it. It's actually a very, very complicated and difficult part of halacha that covers multiple sifim in Shulchan Aruch. It's quite long. We're not going to go through the whole thing, but I do want to go through kind of the major issues that come up. And kind of give people a fairly good balance and sense of you know, how we should relate to non-Jewish employees on Shabbos, what type of things we're allowed to have them do, what type of things we're not allowed to have them do. So in terms of, so I guess let me just share my source sheet. Okay, here we go. All right. So in terms of understanding the non-Jewish employees working on our behalf, it's first worth understanding that there is a prohibition. I'm going to spend a little bit explaining the prohibition, not because I want to focus on telling you it's prohibited, but because it's worth knowing what's prohibited before we talk about what's permitted. So first, it's worth noting that the pasuk in Shemot, referring to the rules of Pesach, says as follows: Uvayom Rishon is the source number one. Uvayom Rishon Mikra Kodesh. Uvayom Hashvi Mikra Kodesh Yelachem. Kol Melachalo Yeyaseh Behem. Ach Asher Yachel Lechol Nefesh. Hu Levado Yeyaseh Lachem. On the first day of Pesach, the seventh day of Pesach, it's going to be a holy day. No work should be done on those days. Except for work that's for purpose of eating that you're allowed to do. Why is this important? Because the Mechelta quotes the following drasha, the following homiletic derivation from this verse, because the verse says, "Kol melacha lo ye'aseh b'hem," no work shall be done on those days. Lo ye'aseh is in the passive tense, so it makes it sound like even, you know, work which is done by you personally, but is done on your behalf. So Mechelta says the following drasha, source number two: "Lo ta'aseh ata, v'lo ye'aseh chavercha, v'lo ye'aseh goy melachtecha." Not only can you not do work, but you can't have your friend do work, and you cannot have a non-Jew do work on your behalf. How do we know this applies not only to Yantiv, to Pesach, and to other Yom Tovim, but applies also to Shabbos? You're also chayav on Shabbos. So just as there's if there's an obligation that you cannot allow non-Jews to work on Yantiv, Kal v'chomer, as a logical inference would be that something which is even more stringent by Shabbos, you'd also be prohibited from having a non-Jew do work on your behalf. Why is this important? Because it seems from the Mechelta that there may be actually not only a rabbinic prohibition of having a non-Jew do work for you on Shabbos, but it sounds like there may even be a Torah-level prohibition. Have a non-Jew do work for you on Shabbos, because it's darshened, it's homiletically exposed. It's learned homiletically from a verse in the Torah. And that's the general rule. If you learn something from the Torah directly, it seems to be that would be a Torah-level prohibition. So, stop the brakes on it. It's not necessarily a Torah-level prohibition, as the Ramban notes in verse number 3, and this is agreed upon by the large majority of Rishonim and other poskim, that it really is only rabbinic. Ramban quotes as follows, verse number 3, below have noti zeh, ein anu muzharim b'torah al melacha shel goy klal. When it comes from on a Torah biblical level, we're not actually prohibited from having a non-Jew do work from us. Lo b'yom tov, lo b'shabbat, neither on Shabbos, neither on Yantiv. Ela sheish b'shavut midivrem in mamir shalanu. Rather, it's only rabbinic. There's a rabbinic prohibition for us to have non-Jews do work for us. K'mo shamru amir legoy shavut. V'zehu davar mevur b'gemara, aval matzati b'mechilta. What about the Mechilta statement? What about this drasha we just quoted from the Midrash that suggested that it was a Torah-level prohibition? So Ramban explains, Ubevadai hi asmachta be'alma. No, that exposition from the Mechilta is only a rabbinic-level exposition. It's what's called an asmachta, meaning that it's a rabbinic-level prohibition, but the rabbis, the sages, they like to rely on certain verses that hinted towards a rabbinic prohibition. So it really is rabbinic, but there's a hint to the existence of it in the Torah. The Torah, it's not actually a Torah level prohibition, it's only rabbinic, but it does have a Torah, it does have some hint to it. It's worth noting that while the Ramban is the majority view, and the large majority view, there is one view that appears in Rishonim, the Smag, in source number 4. I'm not going to read it inside, but the Smag actually does suggest that perhaps there may actually be a Torah level prohibition to have a non-Jew do work for you on Shabbos. He ends up, he is the minority view, as I said, but it is worth noting that such a position exists. I quote it simply because I want to emphasize that though the prohibition is only rabbinic, it is certainly an important prohibition. It's not that there is a, that, you know, this is like something that we can just push away. It's not something that's significant. It is a very serious and significant prohibition. The idea being that we do not want others to do work on our behalf. Shabbos is supposed to be a day of rest, right? The Torah says, that you should not work on Shabbos, neither your son, can have your sons work for you, can have your daughters work for you, you can have your servants work for you, you can't even have your animals work for you. And so in general, the idea is that your house is supposed to be really a day of rest. You shouldn't have anyone working for you on your behalf. And so it makes sense that even on a Torah level, there's no prohibition to have a non-Jew work on your behalf. Nonetheless, the rabbis extended that the same principle of having a day of Shabbaton, a day of rest, would naturally also extend to your non-Jewish employees. You cannot have a non-Jew work for you on Shabbos. That's a rabbinic prohibition, but it certainly flows from the general conception of what Shabbos is supposed to be, a day of rest, a day of cessation of work. Why is it prohibited? What exactly, or is it wrong? So I gave like the general, like machshavti, I guess the theological explanation, but in terms of practice, like why is it actually prohibited for a non-Jew to do work for you on Shabbos? So the Rishonim give actually three different types of explanations for what might be problematic for a non-Jew working for you. And the reason I mention this is because as we go through this topic, it's important to note that all three of these explanations that we're going to go through are actually accepted. And so if we want to avoid these issues, if we're going to want a non-Jew to work for us on our behalf, we're going to actually have to find a way to avoid all three of these issues and not just any one particular one. You have to avoid actually all three of these issues. What are these three issues? What are the three reasons, the primary reasons for which you're not allowed to have a non-Jew to work for you on your behalf? So first reason, quoted in Rashi and Avodah Zarah, is as follows, source number 5, Umashi astur l'Yisrael lomar l'ovid kochavim aseh li kach. The reason you're prohibited from having a non-Jew do work for you on Shabbos, zehu mishum mimitzo chafsecha v'daber davar dibur asur. The reason it's prohibited is because by telling a non-Jew to do work for you, to do that, Nathan, I see your comment. I'm going to respond to it in a minute. If you're going to tell a non-Jew to do work for you, to do that, you're going to have to say, do work for me, do a particular malacha. And there is a general prohibition to mention work on Shabbos. This is a quote in the Torah. I could have quoted the Gemara in Shabbos and Daf Kuf Yud Gimel, which makes the same westward source from. But the Gemara, the Torah quotes in source number 6, V'daber Davar, the verse in Yeshayahu says, a number of things that you should do on Shabbos to rest your feet and to not speak certain words. And so the Gemara learns from these words, what does it mean you're allowed to speak certain words on Shabbos? V'daber davar, darshu chachamim, shelo yehei diburcha shel Shabbat ki diburcha shel chol. That the rabbis, the sages, made a following principle that your words on Shabbos should not be similar to your words during the week. What does that mean? Hilkach asur lomar davar ploni eseh lemachar, o schora ploni ekneh lemachar. Therefore, what that meant was that you shouldn't talk about work activity on Shabbos. You should not say, for instance, I'm going to do the following, you know, work activity on tomorrow, on Sunday or Monday. I'm going to buy something on Monday or Sunday. Nothing you should say on Shabbos, even if an action you're going to do is going to be after Shabbos, even if, you know, you're planning something 10 years from now, you should at no point mention the concept of malacha, of doing work. Meaning that even though I'm not planning on doing work, I shouldn't be talking about car rides. I shouldn't be talking about writing. I shouldn't be using the words that reference malacha, reference one of the 39 forbidden acts on Shabbos, even if I'm not actually planning on doing them. because the very act of speaking it is rabbinically prohibited. We want to really make this day a day of rest. And by signifying a day of rest, it's not just a day of rest of actual cessation of work, but even talking about work is itself problematic. I don't need to elaborate too much. I mean, we all know nowadays that, you know, even if you're not working, thinking about work all the time, you know, if you go home at night and you're still thinking about your work, you're not really off from work. They're still doing, you know, homework. They're still doing, you know, you're still doing work, you know, late at night, if you're still answering emails, if you're still, always on your phone, always available, you're still, you know, on duty officially. So it's the same idea. If you're not actually doing the work, the fact that you're thinking about the work or talking about the work, that is problematic. And therefore, Rashi suggests that when you tell a non-Jew to do work for you, the prohibition that you are violating is that you're doing this rabbinic prohibition of davar davar. You are saying, I am doing work, I'm going to do work. You're telling someone else to do work on your behalf, and by doing so, you are saying the work, you're saying, you know, cook for me, you're saying turn on the lights for me, and therefore it's going to be prohibited for that reason. I'm going to comment on the three reasons in a second. So that's reason number one, the problem of davar davar, that you're going to be, that the very act of telling a non-Jew, saying those words, do the following act for me, is problematic because you are mentioning malacha, you're mentioning one of the 39 things that is prohibited on Shabbos. That's reason number one. Reason number two suggested for why it's prohibited to do something on Shabbos is because to ask a non-Jew to do work for you on Shabbos is, quoted in Rashi, source number 7, Tol otal chelkecha b'shabbat, lefi shenaseh shlucho al chetzi hayom hamutal alav. The reason it's prohibited for a Jew to tell a non-Jew to do certain work on Shabbos is because by the non-Jew doing work for the Jew on Shabbos, it's as if the non-Jew is the Jew's agent. Right, there's a concept in halacha called shlucho shel adam kemoto, that my agent is my representative. Right, the act of my agent is similar to my own act. Right, give it a good example. A father is obligated to do the mitzvah of brit milah, to circumcise his son. It's primarily an obligation on the father, but unless the father himself is a mohel, very few fathers actually do brit milah. In fact, that I strongly recommend they don't do brit. They don't circumcise their children. Instead, the mohel, the father, appoints as an agent the mohel, the individual who's trained to circumcise baby boys. This individual will be my agent, and he will fulfill the mitzvah on my behalf. And so, likewise, Rashi argues that if you are telling a non-Jew to do work for you on Shabbos, although you yourself are not doing the work, it's as if you did the work, because the work that the non-Jew does is attributed to you. You are, in effect, the actor standing behind the curtain, you know, behind this particular malacha, this particular one of the 39 acts prohibited on Shabbos being done. So reason number two is prohibited is because of shlichut, that you are, that the non-Jew is acting on your behalf, and therefore you're responsible for their actions. Reason number three that it is prohibited, that's suggested, is quoted in the Rambam, source number 6, that if you look at the Rambam, Rambam says, he quotes that there's a prohibition, Asur lomar legor lasot lanu melacha b'shabbat, it's forbidden to ask a non-Jew to work for us on Shabbos. And he says at the end, skipping a little bit till second line, he says, V'davar zeh asur midivrei sofrim kedesh lo tiyeh shabbat kala b'inehen v'yavo lasot b'atzman. Why is it prohibited to have a non-Jew do work for you on your behalf? Because if you ask a non-Jew to work for you, you may end up doing work yourself. Right, you may end up seeing, for instance, that a non-Jew, you know, does the work poorly. Right, let's say, for instance, I ask, you know, one of the custodians to, to light a fire, to burn, you know, burn something for me, to cook something for me, and I see that the food is not being cooked well. So I may end up saying, like, stop it, I'm going to cook it myself. And you may end up actually doing the work yourself, despite the fact that it's prohibited for you. And therefore, the rabbis created what's called effectively a siag, a type of fence, that not only is it prohibited for you to do work, but it's prohibited also for the non-Jews to do work, even, you know, non-Jews to work on your behalf, because you may end up doing that work instead of them. You may end up, you know, easily sliding into doing the work yourself. Ram's language here is not just that, you know, they do the work poorly, but, you know, in general, if you talk about work, if you're doing work, you're asking people to do work for you, you may end up doing the work yourself because it becomes more light to you. It's not exactly as serious or stringent. And so to summarize, we have in effect three reasons ascribed in the Rishonim for why it would be prohibited rabbinically for a non-Jew to do work on your behalf. Reason number one is because if a non-Jew does work for you, that is, if you tell a non-Jew to do work for you, then you will have to say the words, do, you know, cook for me. And saying the word cook is prohibited on Shabbos. You're not allowed to say, anything about malacha, about work on Shabbos. It's about speaking. Reason number two is because if a non-Jew does work for you, they are as if you're a representative. It's as if you did the work yourself. Shluchos shel Adam kimoto, what they do is considered to be your action. Reason number three is because if you let a non-Jew do work for you or ask a non-Jew to work for you, then malacha on Shabbat will become very light in your eyes. It'll be lenient, and you may yourself come to do work yourself, right? Once malacha is done in your proximity, you may end up doing that work yourself. Now, to finally respond to all of the comments in the chat about the three reasons and the fact that they're struggling to find something to hang on to, I suggest that I agree in some extent that yes, the fact is that if multiple reasons are given to something, it usually represents that no one reason is sufficient. I don't think that's wrong. I think that part of it is that the Gemara never actually gives us reasons, and so I think they're trying to come up with reasons. But I also happen to think that, despite that being true, I also think it's true that all three reasons happen to also make a lot of sense, and there are good justifications in other areas of Hilchot Shabbat that happen to jive very well with it. We see the same concept of Dabar Dabar in other places. We see the concept of Shlichut when it comes to Malacha on Shabbos in other places. And we see the concept of having others do Malacha on your behalf, leading to yourself doing Malacha in other places as well. So I don't think they're coming up with this out of the blue. I think they have good justifications. There's a good rationale to it. Though I do agree that in general, if you have multiple reasons for something that does lend a little suspect the very nature of something to begin with. But I think in this case, it's well established, despite the reasoning behind it being a little bit questioned. But either way, regardless, there are these three reasons. Mike asked, isn't agent a principle of biblical? Yes, in theory, it's a good question. Isn't the concept of shlichut d'oraita? But as a general rule, shlichut does not apply to non-Jews. You can't have a non-Jew be your shliach, and therefore the fact that we're saying that the non-Jew is my shliach here is really only going to be rabbinic. It's not going to be on a Torah level prohibition. Any other questions or comments, feel free to actually speak up if you want at this point, or you can just keep writing in the chat. We can all read that. Okay, great. So I'm going to keep going. If anybody has any questions, feel free to stop and ask a question. Okay, so that's all with regard to the three reasons for why it's prohibited. As I mentioned, it's rabbinically prohibited. Great. What about, not only, in line of this prohibition, I want to make the point clear. We're going to expound on this. I'm not expand on this. I'm not going to leave this here. We're going to talk about this in further classes. But I want to mention that not only is it prohibited to say something to a non-Jew to do work, right? We saw that Rashi brings the concern of Dabar Dabar, of speaking about Malacha. It's prohibited for me to say to a non-Jew to do work. It's also prohibited, likewise, for me to ask a non-Jew to do work on Friday for Shabbos. I can't ask a non-Jew on Friday to do work for me on Shabbat. Because even though the prohibition of Dabar Dabar, of speaking words of Malacha, is only a prohibition on Shabbat itself, and if I say something on Friday, of course I do anything wrong, but if the non-Jew ends up doing Malacha on Shabbat, then I still have violated the prohibition for the other reasons listed, based on the prohibition of the Shlichut, the prohibition that I might come to do Malacha myself. Those reasons are still valid, even if I asked the non-Jew to do work for me before Shabbat began on Friday or Thursday. Likewise, if I ask a non-Jew to work for me on Shabbat, but I ask him to do the work, tomorrow on Sunday or, on Tuesday, then I also can be prohibited, because even though the malacha being done is only later on, and the concept of shlichut wouldn't be a problem, and maybe even the Rambam's issue wouldn't be an issue, but there would still be an issue of Dabar Dabar, of me mentioning malacha. And so if I want to be able to mention it, as Nathan Rosen mentions the concept of the flexibility of Amir La'akum, of this prohibition, even though there are a lot of leniencies, but if I want to rely on any of the leniencies, I'm going to have to avoid all these issues. I'm going to have to avoid mentioning Malacha on Shabbat. I'm going to have to also avoid the problem of Shlichut and the problem of Shabbos looking light in my eyes. All of these are going to be issues I'm going to have to avoid if I want to be able to do Malacha on Shabbat. Not only that, but it's also worth mentioning that there's also a secondary problem not only can I not ask a non-Jew to work for me on Shabbat, or cannot ask a non-Jew on Friday to work for me on Shabbat, but once the non-Jew does work for me, even if I did not ask him or her, I had nothing to do with them, but they do work for them for me on their own, you know, they decide on their own to work for me, I am prohibited to benefit from that malacha. This is quoted by the Rambam, source number 9. Rambam says as follows: Goy she'asa malacha be'atzmo b'Shabbat. If a non-Jew does work out of his own accord on Shabbat for the purpose in Bishvili Yisrael Asa, if he does so for the benefit of a Jew, asalta asur le'enot be'otam malacha ad motei Shabbat v'yamtin b'chdei shetaseh. Then it is prohibited for you to benefit from that work on Shabbat. You have to wait till after Shabbat to be able to benefit from that work. In other words, if I'm standing, you know, in shul on Shabbos, and the custodian sees that the shul is dark, and the custodian turns on the light for me, then in theory, and we're going to talk about the exceptions to the rules, but in theory, it is prohibited for me to stay in that room. I actually have to leave the room. I cannot stay in the room and benefit from that light. I actually would have to leave the room. And it can only benefit from that malacha after Shabbos. Likewise, if a non-Jew, you know, cooks for me on Shabbos, you know, offers me, you know, a nice, I don't know, food, which isn't the problem of non-Jewish cooking. You know, non-Jew makes me, I don't know, something shahakol, something that's not a problem of, you know, makes me a salad or something. So I'd be prohibited, you know, involved cutting and tochein or some of the other malachot of Shabbos. So I'd be prohibited from using, from benefiting from that food. I'd have to wait till after Shabbos to be able to eat that food. So, in other words, in order to avoid these issues, we have to avoid not only the three reasons given, but we also have to avoid benefiting from any malacha that was done for us on Shabbos by a non-Jew. This is the halacha. This is codified in the Shulchan Aruch. There is no one who dissents about this prohibition. This is very clear-cut. There is a prohibition, a rabbinic prohibition, but still a prohibition to benefit from a non-Jew's work, to ask a non-Jew to do work for you on Shabbos. It is prohibited. That's all introduction. It's all we're saying that it is prohibited. That being said, we're going to spend the next few classes, all of which explaining certain scenarios in which we'd still be able to actually benefit from a non-Jew's work. Because at the end of the day, it is true that, you know, we do have, you know, employees in the shul who work on Shabbos here. We have, you know, we have non-Jews who work for us in other capacities, who might work in your home, you know, doing certain things for you. And there are, there is a rich tradition of having that, of having non-Jews who work for us on Shabbos. It does such concept does exist from centuries, from millennia. We have such a concept existing, and we have certain leniencies we're allowed to use. And I'm going to explore those leniencies. But I first want to describe the prohibition so that we understand where the leniencies are coming from. Broadly speaking, then, what we're going to see is that there are two types of leniencies. One leniency is going to find a way that these, what I call, I guess, four issues, the three different reasons for why malacha on Shabbos is prohibited to ask a non-Jew, and then the fourth issue of actually benefiting from work that a non-Jew does for you, even if you didn't ask a non-Jew to work for you, these four reasons, we're going to find a slew of situations in which we can avoid those issues to begin with. As in situations in which you're not really benefiting from the non-Jew's work. You're not really asking the non-Jew to do work for you, right? You're saying it in a certain way where they're not really doing work for you, and you're not really benefiting from any malacha that's prohibited, right? So we're going to have a whole slew of exceptions where they're not really doing work for you, and these four problems are never going to come up. That's one whole, like, you know, arena, one avenue of solutions as to how to avoid the problem of a mir lacha. There is, however, a second avenue, one which I want to explore today. We're going to explore the other one, you know, in future weeks. But one which I want to explore today is I want to explore the possibility of having a non-Jew do work for you in a prohibited manner, that you're definitely doing something wrong, and yet nonetheless it is permitted. Why would it be permitted? Because we'll see there may be other circumstances which perhaps allow you to ask a non-Jew to work for you, even though it should be rabbinically prohibited. Something else overrides that prohibition. Right, so in other words, there are two avenues to deal with a mir l'akum, to permit mir l'akum situations. One is to suggest that it's not at all a malacha being done. There's no, you know, actual prohibition being happening here. The other avenue suggests there actually is a prohibition happening, but for some other reason, some other halachic value is going to override that rabbinic prohibition and going to allow you to benefit and ask a non-Jew to do work for you on your behalf. So we're going to explore that second avenue today. what would permit you to ask an Anjou to work for you on Shabbos to benefit from their work? So the source for this is actually Gemara. We saw this earlier when we talked about the elevators, but now I want to do this a little slower, and I want to explore this topic a little more fully, where the Gemara says as follows in source number 10. The Gemara presents the following case. There was a non-Jew, there was a baby. There was a certain baby whose warm water spilt. The warm water was presumably prepared for the purpose of circumcision, for purpose of milah. Or back then, the belief was that in order to heal the baby, in order for the baby to be properly taken care of, you know, effectively circumcision is like a major surgery. So in order to properly take care of the baby, baby needed warm or hot water. And so there was a particular baby who should have had circumcision on Shabbos, and the hot water spilled. So what should you do if you need, you know, the baby to have hot water? This is before the circumcision takes place. You want to circumcise the child, and there's no hot water. What do you do? So Amar Lehu Rabba, Naita Le Chamime Migoy Beta. What you should do is you should bring warm water from my house. Amar Le Abaye. Abaye asked, but how can you bring hot water from my house? V'halo Arvinan. We didn't make an Eruv. We didn't make a permissible way to transport water through the public thoroughfare. It is prohibited to take water, you know, through the public thoroughfare. That is one of the certain malacha of Chotzah, of carrying from one domain to another domain. So how can you bring the hot water? So Rabba responds, Amar Le, Nimr Le, Lenachri, Leiti Le. What should you do? You should ask a non-Jew to bring the water for you. And therefore, if you ask a non-Jew to bring the hot water for you, then it's going to be permissible. What is clear from this Gemara, what you can learn from this Gemara, is that in a scenario in which you have a mitzvah of Brit Milah in front of you, you have the opportunity to circumcise a child, to fill that mitzvah of circumcision, and you have a problem, you can't do so, then you are allowed to violate the prohibition of Chotzah, of carrying, by having a non-Jew do the carrying for you. Even though, ordinarily, having a non-Jew carry water or any other object through a public domain to violate that prohibition of carrying on Shabbat would be prohibited, right, because of this rabbinic prohibition of Amir La'akum, of asking non-Jew to work for you on Shabbat. Nonetheless, in a situation in which you have a mitzvah of circumcision in front of you, and you'd be able to fill that mitzvah, then you would be allowed to ask non-Jew to do that work for you. In other words, we can see from here that b'mako mitzvah milah, in the situation where you can fill the mitzvah milah, the prohibition of Amir La'akum is overridden, right? You can override that prohibition. So this Gemara is a good source if you specifically want to deal with the mitzvah of Brit Milah, and you very specifically want to deal with the malacha of Chotzah, of carrying from one domain to another. But, of course, most of the time, when we want to ask an Anjou to do work for us, we don't want to deal specifically with the case of Brit Milah, of circumcision, and we want to deal with other malachot than just Chotzah, other than carrying. And so, in order to extrapolate from this Gemara to other cases which may be more useful and relevant to our purposes, we have to ask ourselves two questions about this Gemara. First is, when the Gemara is talking about carrying, right, and we didn't make an Eruv, so they have to ask an Anjou to carry, so the Gemara doesn't explain what type of prohibition of carrying are we talking about. Because sometimes, if you carry, in theory, you are violating a Torah-level prohibition. If you bring you know, a cup of water from a private domain through what's called a Rishut HaRabim Doraita, a Doraita-level public domain, like it's a Times Square, to give an example, you pass the water through Times Square and bring it to another public private domain, then that would be a Torah-level prohibition. If, though, you were to bring the water not through a public domain that's a Doraita level domain, but just through what's called a Darabana level domain, a rabbinic level public thoroughfare. So, for instance, if it's a small, quiet street, right, like a dead-end street. So a dead-end street is almost definitely not going to be a Torah level prohibition. It's going to be only a rabbinic level prohibition. And so it's not clear in the Gemara, is the Gemara dealing with an issue where you are allowed to override a malacha for the purpose of Brit Milah? Is the malacha involved here a Torah level prohibition or a rabbinic level prohibition, right? What are we referring to? What type of prohibition are you allowed to override and ask a non-Jew to do for you for the purpose of circumcision? Is it only a rabbinic level prohibition, or is it even a biblical level prohibition that can be overridden for the purpose of the mitzvah of Brit Milah? Yeah, well, an Erev would work even in theory for a Rishon LeZrua Midaraita if you did it properly. So, yeah, I mean, there are some people who just make that argument. Well, but they're not saying they didn't make an Eruv. Yeah, I mean, it's hard. It depends on your. There's a lot of talks about Eruv as Gemara, but it's but in theory, you could make an Eruv and make a Rosh Hashanah Deraita into a place that has an Eruv. It depends on the situation. It's not always so easy, but there are in theory there are ways to do it. So either the it's hard to know. It's a story. It's like a particular case. It's a scenario. In the story, we don't know what the story was. Abai making a comment, there's no Eruv. We just don't know if that Eruv, if what his comment is referring to. He could be saying, oh, there's no Eruv, and therefore it's a Malacha Deraita of Hotzah, or he could be saying, there's no Eruv, and therefore it's only Malacha Derabanan of Hotzah. Hard to know. But I mean, your point is well taken because some of the Rishonim make your point. So it's not an outlandish point. Some people do make that argument. The second question we have to ask ourselves is, when we talk about this particular scenario, have been referring to the mitzvah of Brit Milah, of circumcision. Can we extrapolate from the mitzvah of circumcision to other commandments, to other mitzvot? Why would we not be able to extrapolate, right? Why would Milah be significant and special in its own right beyond other commandments? Because we already have a model of Brit Milah overriding Shabbat. When do we have a concept that circumcision can override Shabbat? Well, any time a bris happens on Shabbos, in theory, you are overriding some commandments because you, by even just by cutting, by snipping, part of the orla, that very act is itself a malacha. One malacha is some discussion, probably mitzvah malacha of kosher or other malacha, some discussion of what that malacha would be. But you're over or chavala, you're doing some type of malacha, one of the 30 malachot is being done, and yet, nonetheless, you're still allowed to do a circumcision on Shabbat. Of course, this being in a situation where this is the eighth day, and not if it's a later, ninth or tenth day, that it wouldn't be allowed. But if it's the eighth day, you are allowed to override Shabbat. And so we already have an exam a model for when Shabbat can override Brit. It's not Brit Milah, the mitzvah of circumcision can override Shabbat, and therefore it's a very valuable and relevant question to ask: can we extrapolate from the mitzvah of circumcision to other mitzvot? Right? Can other mitzvot override the prohibition of Amir Lakum of asking Najra to do work on our behalf? So in effect, we armed with these two questions, I will tell you that we have in effect all four possibilities that come out all appear in the Rishonim, all four of them. What are these possibilities? So first, on terms the Rif, the Ran, the Ran and source 11 quote all four of these possibilities. Let me read in English, you want to see it. First, the Ran quotes the view of the Behag. Baalachot Gedolot, one of the very significant Geonim, who makes the following comment: Shematirin Amir Nachri Afilu B'Malacha Gemura Legabe Machshirin Mila. So first, he says the Bahag has the following position. He believes that the Gemara is talking about a situation of a biblical prohibition. That the question of the Hotzah, the Malacha that was going to be done, was not solely a rabbinic prohibition, but actually was a rabbinic prohibition. Sorry, a biblical pardon, a biblical prohibition. And therefore, the Baha'i's position is that the Gemara is telling us that you are allowed to violate a biblical prohibition for the purpose of a circumcision. To ask a non-Jew to violate a biblical prohibition for the purpose of a circumcision. The Ran extends this and he says, Af bechol mitzvot natir amir l'nachri, if we want to extend the Baha'i's position, once he says it's biblical, we could extend it to say perhaps even it's not just. When it refers to circumcision, but actually perhaps it applies to all commandments. And in fact, the Ran quotes, this is the position of the Bala Itur, one of the very early Ashkenazic Rishonim, and he brings proof to this because Itur had the following ruling, that the Itur told, and this we're going to see later on, became a very prevalent practice within some communities in medieval Europe, that people would ask a non-Jew to light candles on their behalf for the Shabbos meal. Right? Imagine a Friday night, for whatever reason, the candles blew out or they ran out of, of space, I guess, the wax. There's only a certain time they can light. They ran out. So you're allowed to ask a non-Jew, the Itur claims, you're allowed to ask a non-Jew to light for you a candle for the purpose of your Seudat Shabbat. You're asking a non-Jew, in effect, to do a biblical prohibition, malacha of mavir, of Havara, of lighting a flame is a biblical prohibition, and you are allowed to do so nonetheless for the purpose, even though it's a rabbinic prohibition of asking a non-Jew to work for you, you are allowed to do so. The prohibition is overridden by the mitzvah of Sudat Shabbat, mitzvah of Kavod Shabbat, of valuing, of the honor of Shabbos, one of which the commandments is Sudat Shabbat, of the meal of Shabbos is the mitzvah itself. So for the purpose of the mitzvah of the Shabbos meal, you're allowed to ask the non-Jew to override, you're allowed to ask the non-Jew to do a biblical prohibition. That's the view of the Itter. However, the Ron continues, Aval Dater of Afasi, the view of the Rif, Eino Kain, Shehu Sover, Deloshar, Emila Nakri, Bemachshir, Emila, Ela, Bedavar, Shafilu, Aide Yisrael, Eino, Elamishim, Shavut. The Rif argues that when the Gemara referred to a the Malacha of carrying, right, what type of thoroughfare, what we're talking about, we were not talking about a biblical thoroughfare, we're talking about a rabbinic public thoroughfare. In which case, the only malacha that you're performing was not a biblical prohibition, but rather was a rabbinic prohibition. And so you can only extrapolate from here then that you're allowed to ask a non-Jew to do a rabbinic prohibition on your behalf. The Rif's position, biblical rabbinic prohibition, not a biblical prohibition, as the Bahag had argued. V'chein da Rambam, so to the Rambam also makes this statement, and the Rambam significantly, when it comes to question B, question of whether or not it applies to only circumcision or other mitzvot, Rambam says, v'hu zal di tir shivut v'shvut, haynu amir l'nachri b'davar shu mishmishut ki machshirei lulav v'shofar. We, the Rambam, extended the permission to override the prohibition of amir l'nachri when it comes to a rabbinic prohibition, not only to circumcision, but as well to other mitzvot, like lulav and shofar. However, there is additionally the fourth view, the Ramban's view, probably what I call the most machmir view, which believes that b'chagavna lami lo shari ela b'mila levad. Even when it comes to a rabbinic prohibition, you're only allowed to ask a non-Jew to violate a rabbinic prohibition for the purpose of circumcision and for no other mitzvot. Why is circumcision special? As I mentioned earlier, lefish minna shabbat lidchot etzla av abishar mitzvot in dochin shivut klal. Because we have a rule that already by circumcision we have a model that Shabbat can be overridden, and therefore only by circumcision are you allowed to ask a non-Jew to violate a rabbinic prohibition, but for no other mitzvah. So in other words, to summarize, we have in effect four positions. We have the most makel position, the position of the Itur, who believes that you can ask a non-Jew to do work for you, even a biblical prohibition, for the purpose of any mitzvah, any commandment. You have the position of the Rambam that believes you're allowed to ask a non-Jew to do any rabbinic prohibition, not biblical, but for any commandment. We have the position of the Bahag, they're allowed to ask a non-Jew to do a melacha d'oraita, biblical prohibition, but it's limited to only the commandment of mila, of circumcision. And we have the view of the Ramban, the most machmir position, that you're allowed to ask a non-Jew to do a rabbinic prohibition, but only for the purpose of circumcision. Any questions or comments so far? Great. So how do we paskin? How do we rule? So the Shulchan Aruch quotes as follows. This is source number 12. He says as follows, Davar she'enu melachav, enu asur lasot b'shabbat, el mishum shvut. If something is only a rabbinic prohibition, mutar l'Yisrael lomar l'enu yodi lasoto b'shabbat, you're allowed to ask a non-Jew to do the malacha for you on Shabbos, v'hu yesham miksat choli, in a situation in which you have either a little bit of illness, o shiyet tzarech davar l'tzarech harbeh, or if there's a what's called a tzarech harbeh, there's a great need, o mipnei mitzvah, or because of the situation of a mitzvah. Ketzad, what an example of this, omer Yisrael in a yudi, b'shabbat la'lot b'ilan la'vi shofar v'tkot kiyav mitzvah. You're allowed to ask a non-Jew to go up a tree. It's forbidden generally, or rabbinic prohibition, to climb a tree. So you're allowed to ask a non-Jew to climb a tree for the purpose of getting you a shofar or getting you a lulav. Or to bring water across the courtyard, a rabbinic courtyard, prohibition of otzah, lirchot bo mikdayar, to do all these things. In other words, how did the Shulchan Aruch paskin? He paskin like the Rambam. The position of the Rambam being that you're allowed to ask a non-Jew to do a rabbinic prohibition for the purpose of any mitzvah. Shulchan Aruch comments as well, v'yesh osrin, Shulchan Aruch quotes as a yesh omrim, that there is a position that holds that is forbidden. This is the position of the Ramban, the most machmir position, that's only limited to circumcision, it's nothing else. You cannot generally ask a non-Jew to do malacha for you. Then the Haggah, the Ramah quotes, Well, the Kaman Pesach Vatir, the Ramah, the Shulchan Aruch later on paskins that it's allowed to be Matir in this situation, meaning, in other words, that the Ramah is paskining that of the two views quoted in the Shulchan Aruch, we pass like the first view, the view of the Rambam, the view that's permitted to ask a non-Jew to do rabbinic prohibitions for you for purpose of any mitzvah. And then the Ramah continues, he says, V'ayin le'el, d'yesh mekilin afkilu b'mlacha d'oraita, there are those who are even permit you to do a malacha d'oraita, the view of the Itar. So the Ramah does quote it as a yesh mekilin. And let's move to the next source. He quotes it appeared earlier on. So what is that source he's referring to? So the Ramah source number 13 is his position. He quotes as follows: Yesh omrim de mutar lomar l'ino yehudi la likn lo ner l'sudat shabbat mishum nesvir le de mutar amir l'ino yehudi afilu b'malacha gemura b'makom mitzvah. He quotes from the Itur that you are allowed to ask a non-Jew to do even a biblical prohibition for you for the purpose of a mitzvah. And he quotes on this behalf, She'al Pizeh, that it's based on this position of the Itur, Nahagu Rabim Lahakel B'davar L'Savot L'Enudi L'Alik Ne'erot Tzoruch Shem Siuta. And on this basis, many communities had the practice to allow, to ask a non-Jew to light a candle, a biblical prohibition, for the purpose of Sudat Shabbat, Biprat V'Sudat Chatuna O Milah, especially for the purpose of a meal for a wedding, like a big, you know, celebration, or for the meal after a circumcision, V'ein Moche Biadam, and one should not protest. V'yesh Le'achmir V'makom She'ein Tzorach Gadol, but the Ramah adds, we should really, ideally, be stringent in a situation in which there is not a great need. Since the majority of poskim, the majority of the halachic deciders do disagree with this position. So, in other words, to summarize, we have four positions in the Rishonim. I'm going to skip the positions that only limited to circumcision because they're really not so relevant to us. We don't, you know, unless you're dealing with circumcision, it's not something you're dealing with on every Shabbos basis. We have, in effect, then two positions that are worth contending. One position of the Itur, believes you're allowed to ask a non-Jew to do a biblical prohibition on your behalf on Shabbat if it's for the purpose of a mitzvah. We have the position of the Rambam that you are only allowed to ask a non-Jew to do a rabbinic prohibition for the purpose of a mitzvah. The Shulchan Aruch clearly paskins only like the Rambam, and the Ramah as well, though he quotes the Itur, does seem to strongly side on the position of the more machmir view, the position of the Rambam, that only rabbinic prohibitions are going to be permitted. Indeed, I quoted from the Aruch HaShulchan, source number 14. I'll take a mic and a comment in a second. Aruch HaShulchan and source number 14, but I could have quoted really from a whole host of Achronim. I could quote Mishnah Berurah, could have quoted every single Achron you find on this topic that all quote the same idea. The Aruch HaShulchan, he says as follows, V'hashtet nian tamua lismoch adat yachid v'makom shekol aposkim cholkin alav. This is very difficult. How can we rely on the view of the Itur when every other posek, every other Rishon disagrees with the Itur? V'dayenu shenismoch al dat Rambam. You know, it's sufficient that we rely on the Rambam's position, which he himself is not the majority position, but at least that's, you know, sufficient. V'nir lehedya shrabinu Ramah asmolo nichalei bekach. Even the Ramah does not seem comfortable with his position, does not seem comfortable allowing you to violate to ask a non-Jew to violate a biblical prohibition for the faith of mitzvah. Ela Shibali, Ashav Ksat, all the Ramah is doing is he's just justifying the common communal custom to have non-Jews do biblical prohibitions for us. Ube'emet katfu demutav shushogin b'lo mezidin. And the only reason he's writing this is because he's telling us that, you know, we shouldn't protest them. We should allow them to do it. Better that they do it, you know, out of ignorance than that we tell them they're doing it wrong and they do it nonetheless and now they are sinning b'mezid intentionally. If you are able to protest, if you are able to tell people that it's wrong to do this, you should not have non-Jews do work for you, then you are obligated to do so. You should tell them very clearly it is prohibited to have a non-Jew do work for you for a biblical prohibition on Shabbos. In our time, this is, you know, already in the 1900s, the Aruch HaShulchan is writing, we do not know of people who are makel on this position. We do not allow you to ask a non-Jew to do biblical prohibitions on Shabbat, even for the purpose of a mitzvah. Micah, you had a question. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It'd be the same. It'd be the same rules. It'd be the same point. I don't know of any. Where did they come from? So I didn't bring the whole sources here, but there are other Gemaras that seem to equate the Makom Mitzvah with those other issues. So we can equate, holy, some type of sickness with Makom Mitzvah. We equate Tzorech Harbeh, like a very great need, to be equivalent. We'll talk about that when I summarize, practical how this plays out. But yeah, all three of those are kind of equivalent in the halachic mindset. And there may be other categories as well that somebody Achron mentioned, and I didn't bring it here, but maybe we'll talk about it a little bit later, that relate to the same categories of, reasons for why potentially should override this prohibition. Okay, so what emerges then is that at least it seems like we really shouldn't have our communities, right, rely on having non-Jews do work for us. Biblical prohibitions on our behalf, right? This seems to be pretty clear. No one really permits it. If it happens, it's made permissible. Maybe there's a way to justify it. But really, ideally, it really should not rely on these, this pr the allowance of having non-Jews do biblical work for us, biblically prohibited work for us on Shabbat. Nonetheless, that being said, I want to quote the following position of the Mishnah Berurah, which is fairly significant. So the Mishnah Berurah says as follows. Despite the fact that he is machmir like the Aruch HaShulchan, that we should not rely on the position of the Ittur, nonetheless, he writes as follows: Mutar lo, source number 15, Mutar lomar le'eno Yehudi le'takin et ha'eruv shenitalkel b'Shabbat. You are allowed to ask a non-Jew to fix an eruv that broke on Shabbat, even though fixing an eruv will involve a biblical prohibition, often of tying knots, so it's a biblical prohibition, and building maybe depending on the eruv. Nonetheless, you're allowed to do so, Kadesh lo yavo rabim, because by doing so, you're going to prevent, many, the public from sinning, right? If people don't know, there's no Eruv, they'll end up carrying on Shabbos, and many people end up sinning, they don't know, it's broken. And therefore, in order to fix what becomes a public issue, we can rely in such a situation on the position of the Ittur, the afidu malacha doraita b'makom mitzvah de rabim. That if we are dealing with a mitzvah de rabim, a mitzvah that relates to the public, we are going to allow you to do even a malacha deraita, to ask a non-Jew to do a biblical prohibition. And so it's on this basis that though it's prohibited to ask, let's say, a non-Jew to do biblical work for you, in your private home for you individually, but the short Mishnah Berurah quote, it is going to be permitted for you to ask in a public setting, in a public mitzvah, for you to ask a non-Jew to do even a biblical prohibition. And so it's on this basis that Igros Moshe finds him to ask the following question, and he ends up ruling leniently. So you ask the following question, in source number 16, Im mutar lomar le'nochri le'afsi ka'air conditioner, mazgan avir, kishenase yom kar b'shabbat le'torach rabim. Are you allowed to ask a non-Jewish employee or just a non-Jew on the street to turn off the air conditioner in shul? The case, I actually cut out the case where he explains the case. The case that he's specifically referring to is a situation in which they had turned on the air conditioner. It was in the summer, the air conditioner was always running. And it happened to be that this particular day was a chilly day, very windy or rainy or whatever it is. And many of the people felt very uncomfortable in the shul. And so the question was raised, are we allowed to ask a non-Jew to turn off the air conditioner for the purpose of the participants in the shul who are cold? So what's the answer? So the Egrat Moshe responds as follows: Hinei im hu beofen shekasheh lisbol leharbe anashim, af im hem miut mehamitpalim, af shemuchachim lelech mibeit haknesset, af shelekach chashash choli, o sheyesh chashash choli miseh, af shecholim lisbol v'shiru mibeit haknesset lipalel. So he says, in a situation where there are many people, and then multiple individuals, even if the multiple individuals are not the majority, even if they're only the minority, let's say, for instance, I guess very practically, it often happens that in a shul, often often it's the women or some of the women who are cold when the air conditioner, based on the different layers and the way that men's bodies differ from women's bodies, so often some women are cold, and so let's say some women are cold, such to the point where they're going to leave shul because it's just too cold to stand in shul. Even if they're not going to get sick, it's just too uncomfortable being in shul. Or alternatively, where they will stick it out, these individuals who are cold, they're going to fight it out, they're going to stick it out, But they're actually going to get sick, right? It's like they shouldn't be sticking it out, but they're going to stick it out because they want to stay in shul so much. So in such a situation where it's so uncomfortable to be in shul, Igros Moshe or Moshe Feinstein Paskins, Mutar Lomar Lenachrim Shiafstik Zerim Halektriki Kidei Lefstika Kor. You're allowed to ask a non-Jew to turn off the electricity and turn off the air conditioning. Then he comments, Ve'avik Ner Lethorach Tzvah Shabbat Min Arui Lachmir. Even though, right, the custom that was quoted in the Rishonim, quoted in the Ramah, the custom that for many communities in medieval Europe, there was this custom that they would ask a non-Jew to turn on a light, light a candle for the purpose of Sudat Mitzvah of Shabbat. Even though that action is very strongly discouraged, and we do not possibly it's permitted to do so, we strongly discourage it. Nonetheless, Mikol Makom, Litzorech Mitzvah de Rabim, En Lachmir, when it comes to a mitzvah of the public, we should not be Machmir. As is quoted in the Mishnah Berurah we just saw earlier, when it comes to an Eruv, and like the Mutar Lo Rak Takin Eruv, Shehu Lasir Michshol, Mishnah Berurah Paskin, you're allowed to fix an Eruv, but as well, the Prima Gardab, I didn't quote this, but as well seems to extend this permission. Not only are you allowed to fix an Eruv to avoid, you know, a lot of people sinning, but you're also allowed, Ela Af Livnot Beit HaKnesset Kishi Vatel Binyano Beloze. You're allowed to make necessary repairs to a shul, which otherwise would otherwise be in disrepair. You know, if there's an example, if there's a major leak in the shul, such that the ceiling is going to, you know, be ruined by the leak, you're allowed to ask a non-Jew to fix the leak on Shabbos, even if it's going to be, you know, a biblical prohibition involved in fixing the leak, because this is a mitzvah derabim, it involves a public mitzvah. V'imkein kol shekein bazen, therefore, kal v'chomer, we can deduce from this, shehu bitul tfilat b'tzibur v'kriyat ha'torah le'arban ha'tim sheyesh la'atir, in such a situation where it's such so cold and shul, and many people are not going to be able to fulfill the mitzvah of davening in a minyan on Shabbos, or they will not be able to fulfill the mitzvah of kriyat ha'torah, of listening to the Torah reading, then therefore, for this purpose of this mitzvah, we're allowed to override the rabbinic prohibition of mir la'akum, even to do a biblical prohibition. We'll be proud, and Moshe then adds another reason to mount in this particular scenario. He adds, Shelo baru psikas elektriki be'en davar dolek mizeh im yesh bazeh isur doraita. The truth is, he adds, it's not even truly clear that turning off the electricity, turning off the air conditioning, really involves a Torah level prohibition. Perhaps it only involves a rabbinic level prohibition, in which case, according to the standard approach quoted in the Shulchan Aruch, even that would be permitted. Because the Shulchan Aruch paskins, this is what Mark paskins, everyone paskins, that the mako mitzvah, for the purpose of a mitzvah, you are allowed to ask a non-Jew to do a rabbinic prohibition. And so, if you're involved, if you believe that electricity is only a rabbinic prohibition, then you certainly be allowed to ask a non-Jew to turn off the electricity for the purpose of a mitzvah, as this would be what is called a shvut, the shvut b'mako mitzvah, a rabbinic prohibition of asking a non-Jew to do another rabbinic prohibition for the purpose of a mitzvah. Shvut, rabbinic prohibition, the shvut of another rabbinic prohibition for the purpose of a mitzvah. He does add, Igros Moshe does add the following point. He says, "Umikol makom im be'erev Shabbat eino cham shiyoter noteh shegam b'Shabbat lo yecham ein lehamid ha'air conditioner mitzad shema yecham b'Shabbat al smach shim yekar yorol ha'nachri yafsik she'ein lechnis lezeh lechatchila." Moshe does add that ideally you really shouldn't enter into this situation. You really shouldn't try to rely on the itur. You really should try avoiding this need. If it happens to be that, you know, you left the air conditioner on accidentally, or you thought it was going to be hot and ends up being cold, then in such a situation, you would be allowed to turn it off in shul. But you really ideally shouldn't set it up in such a situation where you're always going to rely on the non-Jew to do malacha deraita for you on Shabbos. And so, if I had to summarize what we've seen so far, is that when it comes to having non-Jews do work for us, and there's going to be a number of exceptions and reasons for why we can permit such an action, but at least one situation in which you're allowed to ask a non-Jew to do work for you, that it overrides the prohibition of asking a non-Jew to work for you on Shabbos, even for a biblical prohibition, is going to be when it comes to a mitzvah derabim, a public mitzvah. This doesn't mean a mitzvah of many people, doesn't mean a large meal, it means a public mitzvah. So it wouldn't mean like a very large mitzvah. You know, even if you have a meal that has 35 people, that wouldn't be a mitzvah derabim. It has to be something which is actually a public mitzvah, a mitzvah that the public does, such as, for instance, davening or Kriyat HaTorah, or the next source, Orchot Shabbos, quotes from Zonah B'Yuda, for instance, quotes from the Rav Eliashiv, the topic of a shir on Shabbos, which is also a mitzvah of giving Talmud Torah. If the lights aren't on for Shabbos or something you like, you'd be allowed to ask a non-Jew to turn on the lights for you, assuming, you know, even if the malacha involves turning on the lights to be a deraita mitzvah, deraita malacha, a biblical prohibition, you'd still be allowed to ask the non-Jew to do a biblical prohibition for the purpose of a public mitzvah. I'm going to stop the sharing here, but it's worth noting, I'll mention, that not everyone agrees to this. Not everyone feels like Rav Moshe or the person Rav Eliashiv quotes. Rav Eliashiv actually himself disagrees at this point. Not everyone feels so comfortable with extending the Mishnah Berurah's comment to other situations. But I do believe within at least modern Orthodox circles, this is fairly established that we rely on Rav Moshe, that we would allow non-Jewish employees even to do biblical violations for the purpose of a mitzvah. That being said, I think Rav Moshe's comments are still true, that when it comes to a biblical prohibition, we really should ask the non-Jew ideally to do it beforehand. And really, if we can, we really should try avoiding this situation entirely. We really should try avoiding asking non-Jew to do biblical prohibitions for us at all on Shabbos. Even if we ask them on Friday, we really should try avoiding this issue at all. That being said, I will make the point that, as Rav Moshe notes, most of the malacha that a non-Jew would do for, like a custodian in shul would do for us, tends to only be rabbinic. There may be some situations in which they do Torah level prohibitions, and we're going to talk about that next week in other situations, which there may be other reasons to permit it beyond the reason we're talking about today. But for the large majority of things they're doing, it really, really shouldn't. Most of the things have to do with electricity. I know the Lincoln Square, I mean, most of the custodian's work involves setting up tables, which is not a malacha at all, opening packages, which we'll talk about really shouldn't be an issue for them. You know, the radio, which is probably also rabbinic. There are very few things that the custodians at Lincoln Square will do. And turning on the lights, also, even turning on the lights, most of the lights, I don't know if they really turn on or off the lights. I'm actually not sure what the policy here is. But even if they did turn on the lights, most of the lights are probably only rabbinic. They're probably not a Torah level prohibition. And so, even according to the Shulchan Aruch, really all these situations are what we'd call shivut deshivut b'makom mitzvah. They are asking a non-Jew to do a rabbinic level prohibition for the purpose of a mitzvah, which even the Shulchan Aruch said would be permitted even if it wasn't a public mitzvah, even if it was only a private mitzvah. And so this is kind of, I think, how we rely, how having custodians work for us on Shabbos in a shul setting, is we rely on these concepts, we rely on this idea of b'makom mitzvah, and for the purpose of a mitzvah, we're allowed to do certain prohibitions, even a biblical prohibition in theory, certainly a rabbinic prohibition, we'd be allowed to ask a non-Jew to do work for us on our behalf. That really is, I guess, like one solution to solving this issue of how we're allowed to have non-Jews work for us. In future weeks, we're going to explore other possible avenues as to how to avoid the issue of Amir La'akum, but I think this was a good way of introducing the topic. And hopefully we'll see this topic as we go forward and see more potential avenues to avoid the issue of Amir La'akum. Anyways, any questions, I'll take them now. Otherwise, I'll see you all again next week. I know next week will be, next week is fine. Yeah, so I'll see you all next week again. Have a great night. I'm staying on to take any questions. If anybody has any questions or comments, otherwise I'll see you again next week.